podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the King and AI podcast. My name's Kelly Cates and you'll be listening to my dad, Kenny Dalglish, on this podcast and getting his thoughts on football issues about Liverpool, but also about other things as well. And the reason the podcast has come about is because of our family's charity, the Marina Dalglish Appeal, which was set up to raise money to help cancer patients and their families. So if you'd like to support that, that would be fantastic. As much as it's about raising awareness, it is also about the financial support, if possible. If you want to donate, you can go to anfieldindex.com/MDA, or you can go to the Marina Dalglish Appeal website to find out a little bit more about the charity and the work that they do. It's worth having a read about. It's a really great charity and it's something that's very close to all our hearts. Enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Eddie Gibbs and welcome, following a few weeks hiatus, to the King and AI podcast here on Anfield Index Pro. Thanks to Kelly, as ever, for her words at the top of the show there, and thanks to those listeners who, even during our short time off the air, have been making donations to the Marina Dalglish Appeal. Supporting this wonderful charity is the reason Sir Kenny, Paul and myself hook up on the Skype line whenever we can to record this show, and the pledges made online at anfieldindex.com/MDA by people who listen to the show really do make it all worthwhile. In fact, just this week, my mum was given the all clear by her doctors following several breast cancer surgeries, and anything that charities such as Marina's are doing to rid the world of this terrible disease can only be commended, and the public support for that is absolutely paramount. So without further ado, let's introduce our headline acts. And it's been a few weeks or so since we got together. And if anyone is wondering why, our man in Miami, Mr. Paul Dalglish, has had his vocal cords hammered by a bit of a flu bug. I've been tied up with all sorts of work commitments. And the other chap who graces us with his presence on this show has been down at Buckingham Palace having Prince Charles thrusting a sword on his shoulders. So first and foremost, how are you, Sir Kenny Dalglish?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that you don't gauge this as work.
Oh no, this is all pleasure. This is what I do for my
This is hard work. Speaking to you for an hour.
Oh, pop on as well. Oh.
Great news about your mom, Eddie.
Yeah,
yes,
it was
very nice.
Absolutely superb. She the doorbell rang at 9 o'clock, really late on Thursday for the doorbell ringing, and We hadn't heard from her all day, so we were fearing the worst. And then we got that good news. She was beaming from a big beaming smile. I've never seen her so happy in a long time. So that was really pleasing. And whilst the course of radiotherapy now awaits, it's something that we're all delighted about heading into Christmas as a family. So breast cancer is horrible, as I said. And you both know about it. I know about it. And it's so good that we can do this little thing together to try and do our bit to help with that.
She'll need your help anyway.
Oh, always. especially if anything goes wrong with technology.
O2.
That was one of the ones, wasn't it, this week? O2 had issues this week. Were you inflicted by the O2 curse, Kenny?
No, I think they're lucky that the club just changed provider. So that would have been that was helpful to everybody that was employed at the club. They had another network, and that wasn't affected. But anybody could be affected, couldn't they?
Yeah.
And when you hear the stories, it's unbelievable how dependent you are, isn't it, on the internet or your phone or whatever. I mean, I bet you don't know people's landline number now.
No, I don't even know my own. I couldn't tell you what my landline number was.
We don't have one.
No, there you
are. We don't have a landline.
Yeah. So,
I think there's a lot of people like that now. You don't even have house phones.
That's what a landline is.
Well, yeah. It's very nice of you to confirm that.
Kenny's showing his grasp of the technology. Let's rewind a little bit to that experience at Buckingham Palace. Obviously, you were on TV and various news outlets following that, talking about the humbling experience and things like that. Well, it's been a few weeks now. I'm wondering if it's still as humbling, or whether you have finally managed to get a few minions to do things like put the bins out, or whether it's just the same old routine in the Dalglish household.
Well, I didn't intend to sack myself, so I was putting the bins out. If it's no me, it's a nice woman across the road that does it. But no, there's no difference to our life. For us on the day, it was fantastic. Paul came over with Brandy and the twins. Kelly was there with the two girls. And Lindsay and Nick came with their two boys, Taylor and Archie. So we had a fantastic few days. You still feel humble that you're going down to get something that lots of other people have done a huge amount and made a huge contribution to you receiving it. But for us, it was more about our families and our family getting together and having a really good laugh, and just great to get them all together and see each other.
You forgot Lauren.
Lauren was there, right?
Yeah. See, you have another daughter.
I never forgot Lauren. Lauren.
Well,
never
you did.
Any,
you just never
brought any kids with her.
And Paul, Paul, it was a bit of a whistle stop trip for you, that one, but you must have been very proud of your dad, both getting that award and obviously having your sisters and all your family around you for that short period.
Yeah, as my dad said, it's obviously the ceremony is, I mean, you sit and it's nice to be in there. And it's obviously nice to see your dad go up and get the award. But it was, as my dad said, the memories that'll last for forever is seeing all the grandkids together for the first time. You know, it's the first time that all the kids have been together. So it was a great excuse to get everybody together. And the day was brilliant, wasn't it, Dad? The few days was brilliant. It was great. I mean, you organised it really well.
No, nothing to do with me. Right. That was your mother.
Yeah.
Your wee ma organised everything brilliantly.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was good. It was nice. That's what it's all about, isn't it? I mean, it was great to see you get that. And obviously, it's a great day out. But the whole kind of 3 days... three, 4 days was just brilliant.
But you just hope that when you say you're a wee bit humble, I hope people don't misinterpret that as saying that you're ungrateful. I mean, you're hugely proud to have got given the award, and not just for our family, but for anybody else that made a contribution towards where we've come to today. So, as I say, we're really grateful, humbled, but as I said on the day, a wee bit embarrassed as well.
And Dad, it's one of those, isn't it, really, for you? It the way you are, it's almost, you almost share that, don't you? It's almost like a thank you and a you know, for all the people that have helped you along the way, you know, throughout your career, both as a player and what you've done off the field as well. It's almost like, it's almost as much for them as it is for you.
Yeah, but that's what I said. I just hope that they can enjoy it as much as we have, because they've made a contribution as well to us. Yeah. And all we have done is do what we thought that you're supposed to do, and hopefully what your children will do, and that includes you, is
what?
Help people if you possibly can. It's easier to do them a good turn than a bad turn.
You're not living in the house when you get old. I'm not pushing you around in a chair when you get old. You can go to a home. I'm not helping you.
I'm looking forward to that, because I'll not remember you.
that's the first time, actually, Paul. I think you've been included as one of the children and not one of the adopted children.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Until he needs something.
The paperwork came through there.
Well, no, I think certainly as a long-time Liverpool supporter, but as someone that's also been to places like Dalmarnock, Milton Govan in my life as well, it's a massive thing to have achieved, and I certainly think you should be very honoured, and there's no better recipient for me than Sir Kenny Dalglish, and it's our lucky place, if you like, to get to hear from you on this podcast and share in discussions about Liverpool Football Club, which is what we'll do now.
Well, there's a few people I would have put in front of myself who, without being political, I think they did a huge amount. I mean, when you think what Jock Steen did with Celtic winning the European Cup, everybody lived within 25 miles of Glasgow. You think what Shanks did for Liverpool Football Club, and you think what old Bob did as well with his career. And I'm no, I hope I'm no substitute for them, because they felt guilty missing out on those three. But if it wasn't for those three, they played a huge part in your football, then you wouldn't be up there getting it for yourself.
But footballers and footballers and football managers weren't really ever knighted back then, were they? I think, was it Alf Ramsey was probably the only one, was he?
Sir Martin Busby.
True. Yeah, that came, but that came, I think, in the 90s, didn't it? It came after those greats that you just mentioned had passed.
Yeah, but I would have thought Paul Bob would still have been there or thereabouts, wouldn't he?
Yeah, you should. I mean, that's a travesty. There's no two ways about it. I mean, like you say, you don't want to get too political, and we won't go into the ways with all of that, but that is almost certainly a travesty. I mean, the success that old Bob had was second to none, was it? I think no one's even got close to matching what he achieved yet, really.
Well, Fergie was close with a number of league titles, but old Bob won 6 out of 9, which is a better percentage, I think.
Yeah, nice words indeed for those legendary managers, and two of them, of course, with our club, and have treated our fans to some great victories and some great trophies, and hopefully that's where we're heading next. So let's turn our attention to Liverpool then, and whilst there's been a few matches since we last spoke, I saw you on TV, Kenny, in the stands for both the Merseyside derby and the game at Turf Moor. There's also been that 4-0 win over Bournemouth, so what have your overall impressions been of these last three matches?
I think it's fantastic that they finished this week top of the league. It was a fantastic lift getting into the game on Tuesday against Napoli, and to go to Bournemouth to win 4-0, who up until the last couple of games were going really well, lost 3-1 at City, held them 1-1 at half time, and then lost 2 goals in the second half. To go there and win 4-0, the great result. And I think that apart from the European games away this year, I think they've been brilliant. I think they are where they are on merit. I think obviously if you can go 15 games now without defeat, or whatever it is in the league, then you've got a chance, haven't you? And we've given ourselves a fantastic chance. And that's not to say that you're past the post and you're going to take it for granted that you're going to continue to move forward. But I think it's going to be a fantastic end to this, to the year, the calendar year. We've had a reward for what we've done against Bournemouth, and Burnley was a tough game, but we ran out winners. And then we go into the next one, which is, next league game, obviously Man U at home. Napoli's going to be a difficult game, but the place will be absolutely jumping on Tuesday, especially now that we've gone top of the league.
And that, Paul, was a result a few hours after our win. We see Man City going down 2-0 at Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. A few Liverpool fans bound to be heading to work on Monday, beaming from ear to ear. But that really compounds what your dad said there, doesn't it, about the atmosphere that will be there for Napoli when they arrive on Tuesday.
Yeah, and European nights at Anfield, as everybody knows, are a special occasion. And Tuesday, I think when it's as big a game as that is, it's really a must-win game, isn't it, really? So the place, I'm sure, will be lively before the game, and then during the game, the fans, they don't need any reminder of what to do. They've proven themselves on enough occasions what to do on a big European night and done exceptionally well, and can't wait for the game, really, because that's the biggest thing I would say that I miss apart from family, being in America, is not being able to go to the game. And you know, going to the game for a league game is different to the big European nights. You know, the big European nights at Anfield are the pinnacle, aren't they, of games you can go to at Anfield. And, you know, as much as I enjoy watching it, I do have a little bit of an envious feeling when I see friends and family at the game, and I'm sitting watching it on the TV in America. So yeah, Anfield's going to be a special place on Tuesday.
Going back to some of the games that we've just had, then we'll look through the three. Obviously, we had that Divock Origi last minute winner in the Merseyside derby. Kenny, you were at the game. Did you feel a winner was still coming, or were you like the rest of us and had kind of even Virgil van Dijk, after he hit the shot, had kind of consigned themselves to a 0-0?
I think as soon as Virgil hit it, he was on his way back to start defending, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He thought it was going to be a goal kick.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the goalkeeper had played well. And from everyone's point of view, on the Wednesday night afterwards, he's supposed to have done really well in the match as well. So it's not really affected him. But he did make a mistake. If he left it, it would probably have landed in the top of the net. But for some reason, he's put his hand over the crossbar to try and keep it in. And it went back in towards the goal, obviously off the crossbar, and Divock just nodded it in. But I think on the whole, I thought Everton played well that night. They had a couple of chances early on, and we got away with it a wee bit. But then again, if you don't take your chances, you're not going to win games, and I've never seen anybody win a game that's no scored a goal. So you've got to score goals to win matches, and although ours was a bit fortunate, Amid had a couple of chances as well. You don't, at that moment in time, start to analyse a game. You just behave stupidly with getting a wee bit excited because of the result. And there's nothing like winning a game in the last minute. For some reason, it always feels better than what it is if you win 4 or 5. So that night, the result was very well received for the Liverpool fans, but I think Everton also, on reflection, can look back and take some solace from it, that they seem to be playing a lot better than what they have been for a long time.
You know, that I was I did the Tactics Weekly podcast. Now I was saying some of my best memories of being a Liverpool fan were back in the 80s when Liverpool and Everton were both brilliant, and they were the two best teams in the country. And it was a great time to be in Liverpool, because because of the relationship, there was no animosity between the two teams, really. It was much more friendly than what it is now. And I used to love those days when you could sit, you could go to a game at Anfield and you could be sat next to an Evertonian, and it was fine. You know, it was all, there wasn't the same kind of, I don't know if it anger, if you like, in the support, or the same type of rivalry that there is now. But I do think that I enjoy it when Everton are at a decent level as well. And I was going to ask you, what was it like playing when Everton and Liverpool at that time, when Everton and Liverpool were the two best teams in the country? Was it fun to be in the city? Was the city vibrant at that time?
Well, I think if you've got a strong team, you're going to be optimistic, aren't you? And yeah, certainly Everton and Liverpool through the 80s were the two most successful teams in England at that time. Mm. And I don't think there was a year went by where they never had success, either domestically or in Europe. Obviously, Everton won, I think they won the Cup Winners' Cup,
yeah,
which was still a European trophy then. And for us, obviously, we had the European Cup. But I think the banter between both sets of fans, when we got the first ever Merseyside Cup final, and that was what, 3 years or something after the, or a few years after the Milk Cup final. Mm-hmm. I think when we got that and people were going to the match together, one of my abiding memories for that day was a dad walking in with his two wee sons, taking their hands. One was dressed in red and white and one was dressed in blue and white. Yeah. So, and I thought that's what football to me is all about. Yeah, you can obviously your rivals, your competitors, but for me, although football and the result of a football match was important, I don't think it's as important as friendship. And since the 80s, Liverpool have continued to get bigger and bigger. Maybe not had the success they had throughout the 70s and 80s, but they're bigger and bigger, and Everton have they moved along at the same pace as them. So maybe that's got something to do with it. And as I say, I think despite that, I think the Liverpool-Everton derby and the rivalry between the fans is a lot more placid and more enjoyable than what it is between any other big derby matches in the UK. So, yeah. No, it's always great to win, but it's always good to have a wee bit banter as well. And yeah. I think the two clubs should take great credit for the way in general the behaviour at derby matches. I remember some of the stories of the fans coming back from Wembley when we beat them in the cup final, and the obviously Liverpool supporters were saying, you know, it's difficult, you know, it's difficult to stand, go to the match for your mate, and then how can you dance about and sing and act stupid when you've won, when your mate stood next to you and he's dejected and crestfallen. They said they'd found that a wee bit difficult, but I think that's a bigger problem they have than going fighting every 2 minutes.
Yeah. Is there not a story that follows on from that also about the fact that the city had both clubs had organised a bus tour and they were both going to do it regardless of the result in the cup final? Of course, Everton had lost the league with that goal you scored at Chelsea, and then they lost the cup final 3-1 to you, and their players still had to go on this joint bus tour around the city.
Well, they never lost it by a goal, did they? Did they know when it'd be a couple of points or something? But, I mean, the goals are relevant. It was what happened throughout the 42 games. And it was organised that we were coming back in the same plane. And we were both obviously going to go in different buses and do a joint tour of the city. So, yeah, I think that says something about the people who, at that time, were running the football clubs. Jim Greenwood was in charge at Everton. And we had probably the best administrator I've known in a football situation, Peter Robinson. And they were very close. And they had the best interests of everybody at heart. And they thought that would be a good idea. Obviously, it is a great idea until there's a result and there's a loser. And it's no very pleasant for the loser to have to endure that. So we were fortunate that we won and we came back, and that was a great trip for us, but I don't think it was so good for the people at Everton, who'd had a great season, and if it hadn't been for us, obviously it'd have been a lot better for them.
I couldn't see that happening now, Dad. The two teams sharing a plane. Oof, I don't think it's changed, hasn't it? It's changed football. But the back to your original thing, Dad, the Everton are. I was quite impressed with Everton in the game. I thought they looked half decent. It's probably the best quality that I've seen in a Merseyside derby for a long time. From both teams, I thought it was a real, real good game of football.
I thought so. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. No, because the last minute equaliser, but. You enjoyed watching Everton as well. I thought the boy in the middle who they've got in loan for Barca did well. Gomez. Aye. And I thought in general it was a decent game. And as I say, people say that it's easy to say that, like Everton are getting better when you're beating them, but I genuinely think that they are getting better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
On to the
good. There you go.
I love it when we get these agreements. It's always, especially when it occurs about 20 minutes into the show, because it always means the last, the second half's always going to be a bit more spicy.
I'll find something to disagree with about, I'm sure.
Well, we're going to talk about Burnley next, and I think there'll be more agreement here. But you were at the game, Kenny. We were watching. Paul was watching on his TV in Miami. I was watching on my TV in Scotland. But when Burnley scored, let's ask you how you felt when Burnley scored to go 1-0 up, or obviously in that second half. Were there any fears? I mean, we've seen Liverpool teams capitulate in the past at that point, but this team seems to have a few extra gears. And I, for one, was really delighted when Jürgen stuck with the substitutions that he had planned after Milner equalised. But what were your feelings when Burnley scored? Did you still fancy Liverpool, or were you a bit nervous that this might be where it all comes unstuck?
No, you're a wee bit nervous, but then when you see the firepower they had on the bench, and I think the other thing that worked in my favour, Millie scored just quite soon after they'd scored. So we weren't there that long in the game when we were behind. And I think when you're sitting there and you're winning 1-0 and it goes one each and you bring on Salah and Firmino, I think it tends to mentally drain the opposition a good bit. So they came on and they made a contribution. Good free kick. Virgil laid it back. Back-to-back assists. I was two games running. Everton in that one. So he can be quite happy. And Firmino tapped it in. And
after put him up front.
After we got in front, there was never... Well, even when we equalised, I don't think there was much of a chance of us not coming away with 3 points.
There was that nervous point, Paul, towards the end of that game where Alisson kind of scraped one off the post and then set that third goal in motion. But I can certainly say, I don't know about your dad being at the game, but I certainly had a few flutters when that set piece was coming across.
Yeah, he's a good save, Alisson, the top corner.
Yeah,
but there wasn't a great deal of power in the header, was there? A great power. So, and then we did go straight down the pitch and score, but. And in the last minute, Shaqiri covered a great bit of ground there. They get in amongst it and just tap it in.
Yeah. Yeah. But I tell you, I think that's been a big, big difference this year is his quality. Alisson, I mean, he is, I think, one of the elite goalkeepers in the world. And I do think that it's moments like that where you really appreciate it. You know, if you think that it goes in like 2 minutes from the potential to be 2-2, and then he starts the counter-attack for, you know, to change the game to 3-1. I mean, it's a really momental moment in the game. Really.
But when you look at the Everton game, he ran and took the short free kick. And Trent took it forward and crossed it.
No, I agree, Dad. As we've said many times, the goalkeeper's the one position on the field that can make a whole stadium nervous, or it can make a whole stadium calm. And he's just got a real calming presence for everybody. I mean, even when the ball goes back to him, everybody stays calm. You know, the everybody in the stadium, and he's just a real calming influence back there. And as I said,
his contribution against Everton was vital. He had the save for Gomez's header.
Yeah.
He blocked the chest when Joe Gomez got it away.
Even when Sigurdsson puts the ball through to Walcott, was it
Walcott? That's a great touch.
And he hits it off him and it goes out for a goal kick.
Yeah.
I mean, that won't go down in any stats as a save or what, but it was. That was a brilliant piece of goalkeeping, that.
He's certainly intimidating. You look at him in the... I don't think too many people fancy their chances not one past him.
What about his header, Dad? Against Burnley? At the weekend? Bournemouth. When he came out and he just absolutely smashed them in the air. He comes out from... He was just on the edge of his box and he didn't know he didn't know whether he was in his box or out of his box. So instead of using his hands, he headed it. But Daddy, he must have, it was like John Toshik. He came and he just took everything. He took the player and he headed it. It must have gone 30 yards, the header. It was unbelievable. It was as good as you could ever see a centre-half head. It was unbelievable.
Goalkeepers are normally at that, Paul. They just take the lot, whoever's in front of them.
Yeah.
You don't want to be there.
No, no. You can soon get out the way. You're better to be smart than stupid.
Well, I was never that deep anyway. I never went that far.
Kenny, you played obviously with some and coached obviously some of the best goalkeepers in Ray Clements, Bruce Grobbelaar, Pepe Reina. You worked with all of those guys. How does this big Brazilian guy stack up against them?
Well, I think the thing you need for a goalkeeper is presence.
Yeah,
as well as your ability, obviously. And it seems to have turned round with the. A lot of people place more importance in the goalkeeper's ability to pass the ball than to save it. But I would have thought for him, he's intimidating. When you come up against him one against one, his reading of the situation, his handling and his feet are brilliant. But his reading of the situation is fantastic as well. And I think we've got probably the best one in the world there at the moment. And for me, it seemed at the time that it was a lot of money. But I think you're looking back now and saying it was a bargain.
Well, that's the thing.
He has made a contribution, and he's very unassuming. And he's no looking for business. He's no out trying to create a save. His concentration's excellent because he doesn't really in a lot of games get that much to do. But his concentration is excellent and he's really intimidating. And going up against him one-on-one, I think psychologically you've got a wee problem because I think he's very strong mentally.
Yeah, I said it on the... Again, I mentioned that tactics thing, but I said, do you know what the best thing is? That you're saying he's the best in the world or he could be the best in the world. It's been brilliant, hasn't it? We said we need a centre-back. And they go out and they go, well, who's the best one we can find? Van Dijk. And they never messed about trying to sign anybody else. There was no plan B. It was, we want Van Dijk and we're going to get him. They said, we need a goalkeeper. There was no messing about. Who's the best one we can find? And they go out and get Alisson. So for me, it's money. But would you not rather spend what it takes to get the person that you want or the best available than kind of look for a discount price on somebody who maybe not quite be at the level that you want? I think it's a real credit to the club, Dad, that they've gone out and said, you know what, if that's what it costs, we're going to pay it because that's who we want.
Well, you better put the money you've got into the positions that you need. And if you can get the best possible one available there, then take them.
Yeah.
And if there's no one there, then just be a wee bit patient and maybe need to wait until... somebody comes up that you do fancy. But I must say the owners for day one have been fantastically supportive financially in the transfer market for all the managers, myself included. So they've no changed and the figures for players now, the value of players is obviously going up incredibly. And if we're going to bring one in and it's a wee bit more than what you would have expected, then you're going to get a bit more than what you expected for the ones going in. Because I think we've sold quite well as well.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, everybody would have loved Louis to stay and they would have loved Coutinho to stay, but they never. And when they did come to the point of selling them, they got fantastic money for them.
Yeah. Even by Torres as well, Dad.
Yeah.
You know, you can. We have sold well.
It's kind of funny in some ways. This it was mainly brought up during Brendan Rodgers' era. Obviously, this transfer committee that was often slated at times. But you look at the work that Michael Edwards and the others are doing at the club and what they've been able to achieve within the transfer market. I listened to another podcast the other day, and they were saying that Jurgen Klopp hardly seems to have had a failure, or probably even hasn't had a failure in his whole time as Liverpool manager in the transfer market. And that's some going, isn't it, Kenny? For mostly all your signings to come off.
Yeah, but. the transfer committee, or whatever they're called, the lads, Michael Edwards and them, they do a fantastic job going out and finding players. But the final choice goes to Jurgen. As he said, when they come in at first or when they were appointed, he'll decide who comes in and who goes. And the two factions have worked very well together. If they've had any arguments, they've all been behind closed doors. And the people that have come into the club invariably have done brilliantly for us. So, I mean, they've even gone down to the cheaper end when they brought in, like, Matip and Clavin. I mean, they weren't expensive players, were they? So they don't mind having a wee dip at that level either. But certainly when they've gone big. But when you consider you get 145 million allegedly for Coutinho, so you got Van Dijk for half, and the other half went towards the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So
Would you take, if you had to give up Alisson and Van Dijk to get Coutinho, would you do it?
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's good, by the way.
That's no, because Phil's no valuable and
no.
We played dead brilliantly for Liverpool. It's only because you wouldn't want to lose those two.
Exactly, yeah. No, Coutinho's brilliant. If you were offered Coutinho back, of course you'd take him.
I'd take him back and you'd take him.
Yeah.
That's just a sign of how things evolve, isn't it? I mean, who at the time when your dad signed Luis Suarez would have thought that, we're going to be... Torres is gone, this is the end of the world. There would have been people thinking that, but those things are quickly forgotten about within the space of a few games, and you could go right back to when your dad himself replaced Kevin Keegan. You know what I mean? Football evolves and people change.
Aye, it does evolve, but it's more pleasant when the people coming in turn out to be a success.
Yeah.
It's not that comfortable when they don't turn out to be successful.
And the football will be littered with stories. There'll be far more of those stories, won't there, than the successful ones that Liverpool have had.
Well, that's their problem, no ours. As long as we have happy stories, we're okay. We can control what we are doing, that's all right. We don't need to control anybody else.
Last thing on it, Dad, something that I learned now in management was when you first start managing, you think, well, I did anyway, and I think it's quite similar for a lot of people, but you think it's about coaching and management. But what I've found out really is recruitment is the most important thing, because I've never seen a manager win with bad players. So
no,
you can improve the players, but the recruitment piece of management is absolutely paramount to success. Go on.
Yeah, but you're not going to win anything with just one entity, are you?
No.
I mean, your players can be good, but if they've not got the right attitude and they're not prepared properly and they're not felt to feel important and they've not got respect for each other, you're not going to. It's not an individual sport; it's a team game.
No.
So there's a lot of things that go into making it successful.
Yeah. But when I talk about recruitment as well, it's not just about them being good players. It's about them being good people.
Yeah.
I'm going to come in and cause you problems. And then, obviously, you've got to manage the personalities. But if the recruitment piece is, that determines whether you're going to be successful as much as how you manage the group of players, I think.
Well, it's better to have good players than bad players. You certainly give yourself a better chance. Well, There's no just one item that's going to be successful.
Yeah, I agree. So what's next, Eddie?
Well, we need to talk about Bournemouth.
Eddie, this is getting too pleasant, by the way.
I know, all this agreement.
He's agreed again.
I know, I feel like my father and son counselling skills are meaning I'm missing out on a whole profession here that I could make the day job and have a lot more fun.
Hey, the podcast not over yet. Don't worry, there's still time.
Well, let's see if the next subjects can cause any contention between father and son Dalglish. The Bournemouth game, obviously. It's so hard when everything's going so well, guys, to get you guys disagreeing, because how can you disagree on things when everything's going so well? But anyway, we've still got to talk about Bournemouth. We've still got to take a couple of questions from subscribers about those games, and we also have to look ahead to Napoli and Manchester United. So let's do that now. Bournemouth, Paul, first up. It was a game that I was a little bit nervous, mainly on the fact that I knew there was going to be so much rotation. But he went back to obviously a stronger lineup. And when that team was announced before kickoff yesterday, I was quite excited. Obviously, I've told you in personal messages that we've shared over the past few weeks, I was really looking forward to seeing Fabinho and Keita starting in the same team. And we got to see that yesterday, and I thought they both did very well. And of course, a word when Kenny comes to speak, if you could, on James Milner and that 500th game for him. So first of all, Paul on Bournemouth.
Yeah, I mean, it was when you. I've said on another podcast that the I do see the long term. You know, if you look at the age, and you look at the quality, I do see the long term midfield. If we continue to play with the three as the preferred formation in midfield of Keita, Fabinho, and Wijnaldum, and obviously, against Bournemouth, it was more of a midfield four and Keita playing off the left and almost a box. But I do think that they both played well and they're starting to, you know, they're obviously quality players. But I do think that we sometimes with players, when you bring in a new player, because you want, it's like having a new toy at Christmas, you sometimes want them to be. What I'm basically trying to say is you can sometimes devalue what you've already got, and I think that the likes of Milner, Henderson, have been fantastic for Liverpool for a number of years. But when you bring in a new one, you sometimes want to see them do well, and I think that yes, Fabinho and Keita did well. But as you said, Milner's 500th game, scores a goal as well in the game against Burnley. You don't really want to miss out on what you've already got, you know, and devalue what you've already got. But I would like to see in the near future the three of them playing in the midfield three with the front three up front as well, just to see what that looks like. Because I think that would be pretty exciting with Fabinho in the middle, Keita and Wijnaldum either side, and then the front three in front of them. I think that would be pretty exciting. But it was a professional victory, Dad, would you say?
No, I think when it's been going so well,
yeah,
bringing in new players, it gives them an opportunity, although the player themselves, once they get in straight away, they need to get used to what Jurgen wants.
Yeah.
And as long as we've got people who are winning games and performing, playing instead of them, then they can be afforded a bit more time to settle in than they could if it wasn't going well.
Yeah.
So they're coming into a team. And if they're training every day and they see Jordan training and they see James Milner training, then what a great example they are to the two of them.
Yeah.
To any new ones coming in.
Dad, can I ask you something just on that point?
So they're only going to pick up good habits and a great attitude for the two. And if they adopt the same attitude and commitment, then just go a bit slower than what you would like. And long term, it'll work out better for everybody.
Question for you, Dad. Just I'm going off sideways again. When I used to watch a lot of the videos and players, and they asked the questions, and one they ask is who's the best trainer. A lot of the players say Jordan Henderson is fantastic in training. Did you see that when you were manager? Was he you know, because you mentioned about him and Milner in training. Did you find that Jordan was impressive in training?
Jordan worked brilliantly in training.
Yeah.
I mean, they've all got to work hard.
Yeah.
You can't just go out and I mean, every day, you're not going to be there every day. But the two of them are great examples. I mean, there's Millie. I mean, how many positions has he played for us?
Yeah.
And last year, he was probably as good a player as we had.
It's like the Kama Sutra. Lots of different positions. There you go.
I thought that was a Western. But if you, as I say, if they're patient, then if we can afford to be patient and it's not affecting the results or the chances of being successful, then it's helpful to everybody. Although just a little bit frustrating for the new boys that come in.
Yeah.
But long term, serve them well to go through a wee bit of an apprenticeship. If you're struggling, you get a new player in, you throw him in straight away.
Yeah.
Right? And he might struggle along with the rest of the boys. They're going into a team and they can get in whenever Jurgen thinks it's fit for them to go in. They can get into a team that's buzzing, full of confidence, and certainly looks as if they're going places. So it's a fantastic environment for them to be coming through in.
Yeah, and there's a hunger. It makes you a little bit, maybe if you haven't to wait for your chance, it maybe makes you a little bit hungrier to take your opportunity when you do get it. And, you know, we've not mentioned it yet, but the best ever start to a league campaign is nothing. I mean, it's an incredible achievement when you think of some of the great teams that we've had, you know. So And you've got to think that Milner, Henderson, you know, Keita, Fabinho, they've all played the part in that. And Shaqiri, everybody's played the part in it. And it's an incredible, incredible achievement. It's a little bit more pragmatic than what it's been in the past under Jurgen Klopp, or especially than it was last season. But every single bit, it's been more effective based on the results. But also, if you want to go into the statistics of it, Dad, the XG... the expected goal for Liverpool is a little bit lower than what it was last year, but the goals against, expected goals against, is so much lower that the difference between the goals against, the expected goals against, and the expected goals for is bigger this season. So the level of our performances judged on the expected goal is actually better than it was last at this stage.
Paul, all these things are all very well and good, and maybe hugely educational and helpful for something. Yeah. But it doesn't win you or lose you a game.
You I get that, get, but it...
the only get what you deserve from what you put into the game on any particular day.
So I agree with that.
They're all relevant for some way of, in some case, maybe irrelevant because. If you could take Man City as an example, what was the expectancy for them to lose yesterday at Chelsea and no score a goal? They wouldn't have been expected to lose, and they wouldn't have been expected not to score a goal. There's only Chelsea and ourselves. There's only Chelsea and ourselves stoked them for scoring. And against us, we were fortunate because Mahrez missed a penalty.
Yeah.
So these things are all relevant for a discussion, but they don't. They're only relevant, but they don't win you any games.
No, the reason I mentioned those things is it's not. You don't base your opinion upon them, but you use them to basically prove what you see with your eyes is right. So a lot of people are, you know, there has been, Eddie will tell you, I know you're not big on social media, but on social media there has been frustration with some Liverpool fans that the football hasn't been as open and as attacking as what it was, especially in the second half of last season.
Well, and I don't think there'll be too much frustration this morning.
No, but Eddie will tell you. Is that fair, Eddie?
It is, but is. You have to remember that we as fans, if you like, you guys have both worked in the game. Paul still does. I mean, you see it completely differently because you know what it's like to be a professional footballer. You know what it's like to be a manager. Fans, first and foremost, probably watch football to be entertained, if that makes sense. And entertainment is not really what it's about. It is in the sense that that's what put bums on seats and that's what puts money into the game. But it's all about results at the end of the day. And whilst we might not enjoy the football or enjoy watching some of the games quite as much as we did last year, you can see there's a more pace element to it. I mean, if you want to throw stats into it, look at the second half of some of the games last season where Liverpool went a bit flat. I think Jurgen mentioned that in his press conference yesterday after the game, that it's about being good for 90 minutes and we're certainly more effective. It's not all of one and none of the other now. He's found that bit of balance, and surely as professionals,
I agree,
that's the key thing for you guys.
I think it would be logical to say, well, we've got a better centre-half since January than what we had before that, and we've certainly got a better goalkeeper, and that's not been disrespectful to anybody that was there last year. So it's logical to think, if you've improved those two positions, we won't be losing as many goals. It's not as if you've gone extra defensive. It's just happened, isn't it?
I think we've gone a bit more pragmatic, though, Dad. I don't think we're high pressing as much as we did last year, and leaving ourselves as vulnerable if the high press fails. I think we're winning the game of patience. I think that what we're saying, I think teams were waiting for Liverpool to attack them to try and hit them in transition, and I think what we've done this year is we've said, okay, well, look, we're not going to come out and leave ourselves vulnerable. We're going to stay organised, and we're going to wait. We're going to wait it out because we do believe that we've got enough quality on the pitch to take a chance when that chance presents itself.
Well, here's a generalisation. If your weakest point is defensive, what'd you do? You pile on the attack, don't you?
Yeah.
So it's logical to think that may be why last year, if Jurgen thought maybe we're not as strong defensively as what we could be, so let's try and press higher up the pitch, get it back.
Yeah,
it's that old saying, isn't it? The best form of defence is attack. You can see that last year, perhaps, what Kenny's saying, that rang true.
Ah, the other way is play your strengths. And if your best part of your team's the attack, focus on that. If it's defence, then sit back and see if you can catch them a wee bit.
Yeah.
But both have got to function pretty well for you to be successful, especially playing against teams of the quality of Man City. Chelsea are coming to the fore, Tottenham are there. Everton, I think, have improved. Arsenal's improved. The only one maybe at the top six is who we play next Sunday.
Yeah, we'll talk about them. I need to ask you about Mo Salah. Obviously, he was the man at the forefront of that win yesterday at Bournemouth with three fantastic goals, and certainly that second and third one shows that he's really ramming all talk of being a one season wonder out the window. Now, obviously, we've spoke about this on past shows, and Kenny, I think you were pretty certain from the start that there was a lot more to come from this guy, and we're seeing that now, aren't we? He is really going up the gears now as when he's getting these opportunities to play, and we're seeing, as Liverpool fans, we can be under no doubt that if we are going to surge and put Man City in this title race right to the end, then we're going to need to see him at that sort of level as we did yesterday.
Well, no, just him. You're going to have to see a lot of them. But for me, there's never been a doubt about the quality of the players that we have at your disposal. And certainly Mo comes into that. And he's changed a little bit this year. Sometimes, or quite a few times, Jurgen's pushed him through the middle. And he's changed Firmino. So him and Mane have been more central than what they maybe were for most of the games last year. But it's not just about Mo. I mean, he scored a couple of fantastic goals yesterday. The composure he showed, was it for his second goal? When I think he beat the goalie twice or three times.
Yeah, that was
there's nothing missing for his game. And being able to give him a rest maybe at Burnley and bring him on later on would be helpful. And the only thing you were hoping for was that, please don't pick up an injury. Yeah. And that's odd. That's what you want. I mean, you're not going to play 90 minutes every game. And I think he got taken off against Everton and it didn't look best pleased, which was nice. You would hope that he wasn't best pleased.
He doesn't look best pleased scoring goals. What can you read into that?
Well, I've seen him smile a fair bit.
Maybe it's
me that's smiling, I don't know. I don't think he didn't seem too upset. And the good thing for me is he shares it with everybody.
Yeah.
That's a good thing about the team as well. The success they have is shared in amongst everybody.
Yeah.
When they score the goal, they've all enjoyed it. And when they've lost one, then they're all hugely disappointed. So, as I say, it's a fantastic position we're in being top. It's no foregone conclusion that we're going to finish there. But by the way, I think we're going to be in for a very pleasant second half of the season.
Well, we've got a big week coming up. Napoli, I take it you'll be going along to that one, Kenny?
I would hope so. Unless Marina wants me to do the bins, as you say.
Well, you'll certainly be adding to the atmosphere, no doubt, of that one. And you mentioned it earlier in the show that you expect a very noisy and robust Anfield for that one, and Napoli will be in for a tough game, shall we say. I mean, you said that you thought Liverpool would get through this group. Are you still as positive about that?
Well, what I would say is Napoli were a lot better than what I thought they would be. I mean, in the away leg, or the away game, I thought they were excellent, Napoli. And they played really well against PSG. The goal they lost when they were 3-0 up against Red Star Belgrade, that could be their downfall. But I think they won 4-0 at the weekend. So it's going to be a fantastic night, but it's going to be a difficult game as well. And we've got a choice. We don't lose a goal, we only need one. We lose a goal, we need to get minimum three, don't we?
Let me ask you, you're in that situation, flip it, you're in charge of Napoli. What tactics do you take?
I think they go the same as what they played in their home ground.
Do you think they're going to try and score, or do you go and try and keep a clean sheet?
Well, I think they would play the same way as when they played at home, because at home it'd be the same problem, wouldn't it? Mm. A draw is okay, but you don't want to lose a goal. I would think that they've got the same problem as we've got. Do we go charging forward, try to get three? Do we remain cautious, try to get one maybe at any time of the game? And as long as we don't lose a goal, we're always going to be a chance of scoring one. So both managers have got dilemmas. But I think on the night it'll be a really difficult game. But I think we'll just have enough to see them off.
I can't see
PSG doing anything other than winning in Belgrade.
It's a tough place to go though, Dad. I think it's been
Paul, they started against PSG really well,
yeah,
in Paris. Lost a goal, then another one, and they just collapsed. And the same.
No, I get that. It's different in Belgrade, though, isn't it? It's different.
Yeah. But Paul, they're going to be under pressure in Belgrade as well. Red Star.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they and PSG are used to being the ones who've got to impose themselves in the game, and they'll be the ones that will be trying to do that. It's nothing that they're no used to.
Yeah.
So they'll go and they'll attack them and they'll take the game to Red Star. So yeah. I think we need to obviously not be confused and just go out and play the way that we can play. If we're going to go for the throats, then we're going for the throats. Don't get caught in between two.
Well, let's hope we can progress through that one and get to the business stages, if you like, of the Champions League when everything resumes in the new year. The before that, though, we will have the Manchester United game. Now, we won't talk again on this podcast before that, but what are your thoughts ahead of that one, Kenny? Are you surprised by the... I mean, you mentioned it there, Man United are the only team that are probably not at about the level that they would have expected to be. Has that surprised you? I mean, there's been stuff. They have the highest wage bill in the league. They've spent huge money on big superstars, but it just doesn't seem to be clicking for our friends along the East Lancs Road.
No, it doesn't seem to be a happy place to work, I don't think. There seems to be a lot of factions at war there. One thing you can say about Jose Mourinho, aside from the success he's had, he certainly knows how to set up a team not to lose a match. And I think his first season here, the two games we had against Man U were dire. But you're allowed to play defensively if you want to play that way and set them up. And if he's all going to organise them, then they will be really organised. And we've got to overcome that. So he'll lay down the gauntlet, set himself up defensively, I think, and just hope that he can get on the break. Last year at Old Trafford, he tended to pick out Trent, and he knocked a couple of long balls for the goalkeeper up to there for Lukaku to go and challenge. Rashford got on the end of him and scored. So I wouldn't be surprised if he sits back and tries to get something happening against Trent with Lukaku going out to play on top of him and Rashford on that side. If he's been successful with it, I don't see why he would need to change it.
And Paul, what are you expecting of that one? I mean, much like your dad said there, we know what Jose Mourinho will do. There'll be no surprise there. For all his successes as a coach, you know exactly the way he'll set a team up. I mean, I know they were pretty flamboyant against Fulham yesterday, scored a few goals, but I don't think we'll be expecting anything other than a well-organised defensive show from Man United trying to suppress Liverpool. And as your dad said, they're trying to pip one on the break. That's what they'll be setting out for, surely.
Yeah, and nothing will make them happier than ending the unbeaten run. So he'll you expect Man United they'll come they'll come into the game and they'll play defensive, wait for mistakes, and then try and punish you. And it's up to Liverpool then to be able to break them down. I think we'll be patient in our approach. We won't go and try and force the issue in the first 10, 15 minutes and leave ourselves exposed. I think we'll wait it out, wait for our chance and trust the quality that we've got on the pitch to score goals. And I think it's probably not going to be the most enjoyable spectacle to watch. I think this, the new Liverpool, if you like, a little bit more pragmatic. And then, a defensive-minded Man United, it doesn't really play into to be a good spectacle. I think the game on against Napoli will be a much more enjoyable game to watch with a little bit more open. So, yeah, it's not a game I ever look forward to, if I'm honest. The Man United game is the one game. I can enjoy the derby. You know, that's not... I don't have that kind of... That kind of feeling that against Everton that you have against Manchester United as a Liverpool fan, that's the game where you just want to try and get the 3 points and move on. But there's not one part of those 90 minutes that you enjoy.
I would have thought it'd be quite similar to the Chelsea game when they came to Anfield a few years ago. Chelsea couldn't win the league, but they could stop us or damage our chances of winning it. And I think that's what his frame of mind will be. They're top of the league, right? We can't go top, but we can make it difficult for them to win or to finish top of the league.
Yeah.
So I think that will be his philosophy.
Yeah, spoilers.
Aye.
Yeah.
And I think it would be useful if there was some conversation in the public domain. I know the punters maybe understand that, but just to get it through to them, that this would be his objective.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it makes it a wee bit more relaxing for us as well. The punters don't get too excited about us making 5 or 6 passes.
Yeah.
And also for us, it undermines what he's doing a wee bit. And if they get a goal, then it's only like feeding the monster, isn't it? they'll sit back there and they'll defend in numbers. They were really well organised. So it's important for us not to lose a goal over the next 2 games anyway. I mean, it's never good to lose a goal, but certainly these next 2 games, it's I think it's really important that we don't lose a goal. If we're 4-0 up, it's okay. Unless we get to about 4-0 up, then we're all right.
But it's, do you know what? You've got to, I'm more on the professional side, same as you. I do admire teams that can defend well, you know, and I think that's something that Marino's teams have done. It's not, it maybe might not be the most pleasing on the eye for the neutral fan, if you like, or for fans of the team. But from kind of an actual coaching point of view, you've got to admire how well he gets his teams defensively organized, as you said. That maybe that might not enjoy watching it as much, but you've got to give him some credit for what he does defensively.
When he won the Champions League with Inter, they were playing Barcelona, the 2-0 up for the first leg. Barcelona went 1-0 up. I think Inter get a man sent off. I think they were 1-0 up when they got a man sent off in the Nou Camp. And I tell you, it's one of the best defensive displays I've seen. They go through 2-1 in aggregate, and it was an unbelievable defensive performance.
Yeah. But it's almost, because if I think back, and I don't want to compare them, but if you think George Graham, he was a defensive-minded coach, wasn't he, really? The Arsenal back then were about winning 1-0 and keeping clean sheets. Was it as frowned upon to play a defensive style back then as it is now, or is this kind of a new thing, really, about the style of football that you play?
Oh, George Graham was successful.
Yeah, but so's he been, to be
That's
fair.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But as long as you're successful, Paul, it doesn't really matter which way you play.
Yeah. I'm just wondering. I don't remember
pleasant,
the media
It's more
perception.
Pleasant on the eye. It's more pleasant on the eye to watch an attacking team play than what it is to get your success defensively.
Yeah, but Italy used to win World Cups doing it as well, didn't they?
Aye.
So, but for me, it was just more, not more about the way, you know, whether it was successful or not, but what the kind of media perception was, because it seems to me it football in recent times has become as much about your style of play as the results. And I just wondered if that was the case back, say, under the Arsenal days under George Graham, or whether it has become more important the way that you play stylistically in modern day football.
No, I think Man City champions, haven't they? And before that, Leicester. Leicester were a different, were probably the last one that had more of a sound defensive base to go out and
play. Conte as well at Chelsea, Dad, was they defended first, didn't they?
Yeah, I need Hazard.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everybody defends first. Whether it's up in the other box or whether it's in your own box, you're still defending. But a lot of people defend. If they defend deeper, it's a great success for them. And it doesn't matter which way they want to do it. They're still going to be successful. And they deserve great credit for the success. But it's certainly more attractive to see them play attacking football. And I think with the likes of your Man Cities and the teams that are going well, Liverpool, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea. I mean, Chelsea did a number on Man City yesterday. They just had Hazard up front and they defended really well. But they got the 2-0 result. So, but I think because of the success Man City's had, the success Barca's had, I think there's a lot more teams trying to play that positive attacking way and they're more pleasant in the eye. But at the end of the day, you can only play the system of the hand that you've been given by the players that you have. And yeah, if the players you have can't play that way, then you're the one that's wrong. Try to get them to play that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But there we go, Dad. There we go. We've done an hour there.
About. That seemed longer than that.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It certainly does. Certainly does. But I've missed the little chats.
There
it's the only
you
time you answer your phone.
Well, it's the only time you call me. Because it must be a free call, is it?
Yeah, Skype.
Okay, so that's it for us this week. I hope you've enjoyed the insight again from Kenny and Paul. Thanks to them. Kenny was in at the club this week and you managed to sign the competition winner. It was Steve Hoare, and you kindly signed the 1978 memorabilia for him, and I think he's going to give it to his dad for a Christmas present. So hopefully we aren't ruining his dad's Christmas present by revealing this on air. But thank you, Kenny, from all that entered the competition, and I'm sure Steve Hoare will be a delight recipient of that prize. That's it then for the King and AI this week. We do hope you've enjoyed the shows that we've done so far. We'll hope to squeeze in a couple more before Santa Claus comes to town, and let's hope there's a couple of early gifts for us Liverpool fans with wins against Napoli and Manchester United to come before the next show. So all that remains is me to thank the fantastic Mr. Paul Dalgleish. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Eddie.
And of course, the incredible insight once again from the legend that is Sir Kenny Dalgleish. Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you, Edward.
And we'll close the show out once again, as we always do, a few words from Kelly Cates. And at this time of year, Christmas, where you will be doing that bit more shopping than normally, Kelly has a little tip to how you can raise some extra funds for the Marina Dalgleish Appeal. And they won't cost you a penny. Just go and do normal things that you do when you're buying your Christmas shopping. And a few proceeds of that will go towards the Marina Dalgleish Appeal. So here's Kelly with a few words on that.
Thanks very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show. There is one more thing that you could do, but it doesn't really require any effort. If you use Amazon, if you go to smile.amazon.co.uk, there's an option to select a charity. If you select the Marina Dalgleish Appeal, then every time you make a purchase at Amazon, they will make a donation to the charity. All you have to do is use smile.amazon.co.uk as your website to buy things from Amazon. It should, in theory, be quite straightforward. Thanks very much again.
Podcast Network.